Environmental justice activists at the UN Climate Summit push back against an agreement that they say means genocide for Africa and so much of the African diaspora. We'll talk to a DC-based activist on the ground in Paris at the summit. And stateside, activists continue to organize against Islamophobia, state violence, and what everybody is now calling Donald Trump fascism. All that and more coming up. To Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition for December 10th, 2015 on 89.3 WPFW Pacifica's listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. On the ground and onthegroundshow.org are devoted to coverage of social justice activism on the streets and in the suites of power. I'm Esther Rivera. I'm in the studio with Jamila Bay and Amy Alexander, they're gonna give us some side eye soon. But before that, speaking of activism, WPFW is in the midst of its year-end membership drive. Just in time for activism-minded gifts, for as little as $35, give the gift of a membership to WPFW to your friends or family. Or if you're tax-minded, this is the perfect time to give a donation, which is tax-deductible. This is the hour for On the Ground to raise $500 for this week's goal to keep this listener-powered community station on the air. So call 202-588-9739 or pledge online at WPFW.org to show your support for On the Ground's coverage of activism here in the belly of the beast of national and international corporate and military power. So I need just five people becoming a new sustainer or renewing a membership. Becoming a media activist, that's what you do when you become a member of WPFW. Become a media activist at only $10 a month by calling 202-588-9739 or pledge online at WPFW.org. No amount is too small or large, obviously, okay? So as we begin our show today, environmental justice activists are wrapping up an important afternoon session at the UN Climate Summit in Paris. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Leslie Fields of the Sierra Club, who is based here in D.C. but is in Paris now, and we'll connect with her there. Also, as this historic is happening in Paris, activists are on the ground right here in D.C. this morning. At a town hall, they're talking about state violence, and hopefully we can go to those voices live as well. And of course, as I mentioned, Amy Alexander and Jamila Bay are here to give us the latest about the U.S. presidential race. All that is coming up, but let's start with our headlines. The Southern Poverty Law Center has issued a statement saying that Donald Trump's call for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States is, quote, just the latest example of the extreme anti-Muslim rhetoric that has reached a fever pitch. The center says that Trump relies on a debunked poll by the Center for Security Policy headed by conspiracy theorist Frank Gaffney. Gaffney's organization portrays all Muslims as extremists and is at the forefront of a well-funded effort to vilify Muslims in the United States with misinformation and demonizing rhetoric and to instill a climate of fear. The Southern Poverty Law Center says that the mainstreaming of hate and extremism is dangerous to the millions of peaceful Muslims in our country and harmful to the fabric of our society. The Law Center is also distancing itself from a report it endorsed last week and that we aired about police in Dothan, Alabama, planting drugs and weapons on young black men and being a part of a white supremacist organization. While that county in Alabama, Houston County, and the district attorney, Doug Valeska, have a documented long history of racism, the center and other reporters say that more documentation needs to be released to substantiate the serious charges. Civil rights advocates gathered at the Supreme Court yesterday as the court heard arguments on a University of Texas case that some observers say could destroy any remaining vestiges of affirmative action at colleges in the United States. Much of the press coverage of yesterday's session focused on a statement from Justice Antonin Scalia, who drew gasps when he said that black students with what he called inferior academic credentials may be better off at a, quote, less advanced school, a slower track school where they do well. He added, quote, I don't think it stands to reason that it's a good thing for the University of Texas to admit as many blacks as possible, he added. The Reverend Al Sharpton was among those who witnessed the session and Scalia's comments and afterwards spoke to reporters outside the Supreme Court.
I felt very concerned given the line of questioning, even the tone, when I heard Judge Scalia suggest that maybe blacks do better at schools that are not as fast as UT. I didn't know if I was in the courtroom at the United States Supreme Court or at a Donald Trump rally. I thought that it was also very interesting when the Chief Justice asked, how long will it take, like we were on a clock rather than a goal toward real racial justice. I think that if this court makes the decision that is different than Fisher 1, it will be a tremendous blow to an ongoing march toward racial fairness and equality in higher education and have ramifications around other areas of American life, such as employment and such as in the private sector. Today could be a devastating blow to those that are continuing to fight for racial fairness on campus. It seems to me in a climate that we're seeing around the country, for this court to sit up and even flirt with the option that they would limit the fairness and limit the factors that race could even be considered, among many others equally, is something that is appalling and something that is extremely concerning to those of us in the civil rights community.
In one of several actions being planned around the country in opposition to Donald Trump's anti-Muslim rhetoric, Code Pink will be staging a protest in D.C. today at 3 p.m. outside the Trump International Hotel, located at 1100 Pennsylvania Avenue in Northwest D.C. In Black Lives Matter news, protesters took to the streets of Chicago yesterday calling for Mayor Rahm Emanuel and State's Attorney Anita Alvarez to step down as a Department of Justice investigation has launched into the death of Laquan McDonald at the hands of Chicago police. In Baltimore, William Porter, the first police officer on trial in the death of Freddie Gray, took the stand in his own defense yesterday. The defense and prosecution also questioned experts about how Gray received the injuries that led to his death, with his spine nearly severed at the neck. In the coming days, Porter's attorneys are expected to call witnesses to testify about Porter's character. Here in D.C., family and friends of Alonzo Smith are preparing for the Justice for Zoe rally this Saturday to demand justice in his death last month at the hands of so-called special police, which are licensed by the Metropolitan Police but are not official members of the department. The action will be this Saturday, December 12th at 2300 Good Hope Road Southeast here in D.C. At a recent vigil for Alonzo Smith, his mother, Beverly Smith, said that she wants answers about what happened to her son.
I reviewed my son's body myself, okay? My son had two black eyes, his neck broken, his shoulder appears to be broken. He had massive bruises on his neck. He had three round circle marks on his chest, and he was bruised in his groin. Also, his jaw was swollen, okay? When MDPD did their press release on November 3rd, they did not indicate that my son was beaten or even he had bruises. They did not indicate that at all. Instead, they just called him a prisoner. Well, why was he a prisoner? Why was he in custody? None of that information has been provided to me and my family, and we have a right to know, and we want to know right now. What happened to my son? We want truth, and we want justice.
Also, a correction in this case. In one instance during our live broadcast last week, I misstated Alonzo Smith's last name. The error has been corrected on our archive show at onthegroundshow.org. I apologize for any confusion. Now, happening right now at the UDC Law School in Northwest DC is America Under Review, The State of Police Brutality and Reform, a town hall and press conference featuring a panel including Ron Davis from the Department of Justice, Barbara Arnwine of the Transformative Justice Coalition, Ryan Riley of the Huffington Post, and others. And also Erica Garner, the daughter of Eric Garner, who was choked to death at the hands of the NYPD, and that his death was caught on film and the officer wasn't indicted. And so that is happening until 1 p.m. at the David A. Clark School of Law in the Moot Courtroom at 4340 Connecticut Avenue Northwest and here in D.C. Our intern Chantel James is on hand at the event, and she sent us some sound from the Dean Shelley Broderick of the University of D.C. Law School.
Dealing with the tragedy of the Daniel Holzclaw trial, he is a police officer who used his badge to rape, and he raped 13 black men from the ages of 17 years old to 57-year-old grandmother. With impunity, with no regard for their rights, threatened their lives. Not only would rape these women by threatening them as a police officer to arrest them, put them underneath the jail, he would then drive these women to abandoned lots and fields and threaten them, where they thought they would never live again. After he raped them, would go back to their homes and threaten them and rape them again sometimes. This is the tragedy of our system. When we talk about police reform, we got to look at it comprehensively. And that does not mean that we don't have regard for the fact that there are police officers who really take to heart their mission and their duty to protect and serve. Nevertheless, it is true that we have a system that has been infected with many, many problems. And that's what we're going to talk about today. And how do we change that system? How do we move forward?
Again, that's America Under Review, The State of Police Brutality and Reform, a town hall going on right now at the UDC Law School in Northwest DC. That was Shelley Broderick, I believe the dean of the law school, speaking. And those are our headlines and happenings. When we come back, side eye at the election 2016. I know you're glued to the radio with all this information we're dishing out, but go to the phone right now and show you're down with On the Ground, 202-588-9739 or WPFW.org. If you're listening online, you can just click on the Donate Now button and make sure that Thursday's Community Watch and Comment is in the window. Now, just for $10 a month, less than the price of a ticket, one movie ticket, you can become a member and a sustaining member of the station. We want you to stay in the spirit of this year of activism and give a gift to WPFW, give a membership to a family friend or a family member. All donations are tax deductible. 202-588-9739. And the operators can tell you about all available thank you gifts. Stay with us.
Time is really wasted.
now it's the cleanup woman. I have to really find out why you love that piece so much. But anyway, it's time for our weekly politics segment, Side Eye on 2016. We're excited to have our two expert media and political analysts, Jamila Bay and Amy Alexander, providing unvarnished analysis of election 2016. Let's jump in, Jamila. You're up first this week. What had you rolling heavy side eye this past week?
Thanks, Esther. I have to admit that the skilled orator that is President Barack Obama got some serious side eye from me this week. He came out on a Sunday night. Now, the last time that happened was the I Killed Bin Laden announcement. But this topic was the slaughter of 14 people and the wounding of even more that happened at a Christmas party in San Bernardino. My hopes that the president in his last term with a more direct attitude would come out and address the tragic consequence of easy access to gun causing another mass killing in the U.S. However, I will give some credit here for the skill this took. Obama dodged the issue of why Americans keep on shooting each other, but he did use this opportunity to talk about the plan for ISIL. Rather than explaining how Americans are at a greater risk from one another, it was time for the president to explain the religious issue. In fact, I took to Facebook with my side eye. I wrote, quoting myself, how fortunate for this time in this political season that these shooters were Muslims and she was a foreign Muslim from another arguably hostile country. Being able to invoke radicalized Islam lets POTUS and Congress off the hook in talking about the out-of-control gun violence culture here and American-on-American crime. Let's listen now. This is a line from the president's talk Sunday night.
Ability to reject proposals that Muslim Americans should somehow be treated differently. Because when we travel down that road, we lose.
Now, those who disagree with me might say, well, if Obama came out against guns and access, he's just going to rile up the right. He's going to make it harder on the Democrats come next election cycle. But you know what? Bonk that. I roll my eyes. The GOP is in presidential disarray. This was the time for pop off Obama to let him know he's here and he's about to bring the noise, bring the funk, which is to say he's reclaiming the narrative. I needed more. I sadly roll my eyes this week. How about you, Amy?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you're right. I mean, sadly, there was enough sadness in the past week to go around. I have to say, obviously, it was Trump again dominated the news cycle in the last few days. Initially, you laughed because it was grim. You laughed with grim hilarity. Because of the absurdity of his latest proposal, which is to, ban, as he says, ban Muslims from entering the United States. But, you know, it's not funny. It's absurd, but it's not funny. Of course, he later amended that statement that he issued Monday to add the word temporary, saying that, you know, if elected president, he ostensibly only would ban Muslims until Congress and authorities can, quote unquote, figure out what's going on. But, you know, what does that mean? Now, let's just listen to a little clip of that very shocking press statement he made on Monday from a podium in South Carolina.
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States until our country's representatives can figure out what the hell is going on? We have no choice. We have no choice.
Yeah, so my favorite part of that statement was when he added with emphasis at the end, we have no choice. Actually, we do. As Americans have a choice not to take such a draconian step. And of course, it kicked up all manner of agita, and I mean, it went off like a bombshell. And so here we are these many days later, press and lawmakers across the political spectrum have pretty much denounced that idea. Even Dark Lord Voldemort, when you have Dick Cheney, you know, croaking out, you know, Cheney came out within the next news cycle saying something along the lines that Trump's idea does not align with quote unquote our American values. I mean, from Cheney, you know, that's really rich. That is like so rich, you know, when you consider that Cheney's the guy who not only ordered up two unnecessary wars, but who also, you know, has said very openly that he has no problem with U.S. representatives torturing and waterboarding. You know, so you know, all in all, this previously wacky, if also confounding, tone of the Trump campaign is now taken a decidedly dark turn. You know, and I'm a native of California. Many of my classmates while I was growing up in San Francisco had grandparents and older relatives who did time in Japanese internment camps. You know, so this move from Trump potentially, I mean, it's half a click away from saying let's round up Muslims and dump them in camps. So now I'm paying, you know, a different kind of close attention to Trump's campaign. So this week I gave a little bit less of a side eye view of Trump, you know, and now I'm sort of looking at him in a thousand-yard stare.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's, you know, it's gotten real. We gotta look closely at this now and pay attention.
Okay. Well, thank you, Amy and Jamila. We'll definitely revisit this for our monthly F-word segment. You know, I even heard Chris Hayes use our term, the F-word, on his show. I was like, oh, stole our stuff. So, you know, the corporate media is finally waking up to what time it is. So when we come back, we're going to try to bring you more voices from that town hall happening at UDC. In the meantime, won't you please give Jazz and Justice some love this morning? None of the money goes to us. We're all volunteers. I've worked in corporate media, so have my colleagues here. And, you know, I choose to work for Pacifica, where we can have unfettered voices to tell what is really happening in the world. I know you're glued to the radio with all this information we're dishing out, but go to the phone right now and show you're down with On the Ground, 202-588-9739, or pledge online, just $10 a month, less than the price of one movie ticket. Stay in the spirit of activism and give a gift to WPFW, 202-588-9739. The operators, again, can tell you about all available thank you gifts. Stay with us.
If he stood here today, now somebody tell him, What would Nancy Harrigan say if she lived today? Baltimore, 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 Baltimore.
Baltimore City, look to the sky. The North Star is still shining, still shining. Only we and we alone can change, change our story. Everything we need, we possess within. There's always a silver lining.
All the high rises fall, those that fell still rise. Brazilian and in our eyes, you can see we hypnotized by the strength we possess as one. I look at my son and see the days when I was young. Cops had us on the run just from being born here and sharing the shade of my peers. I see the renaissance near, elevating from fear. Yeah, they throwing us away because our moms can't pay. All of us need commissary, cause they was raised the same way, so let us pray.
Who amongst us will light a candle to help our children find the way back home?
All the teachers who teach our children that to live a life with truth is to be unsold.
Neighborhood by neighborhood, we've got to claim a brighter future. That's the
And welcome back to Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition. That was the new track by our DMV diva, Navasha Dea, with Fanon Hill. And that is Baltimore Stand Strong. And we're all here this morning asking you to stand strong with us, with WPFW. Stand strong with On the Ground. You know, all the weekday daytime justice portion of the programming, you know, we have a somewhat heavy lift broadcasting when so much of our listenership is at work. But if you can listen and you do listen during the day, please call and support by calling 202-588-9739. Do it in honor of International Human Rights Day today, this Thursday, December 10th, International Human Rights Day. Do it in honor of preserving a media and shows like this one that started to sound the alarm about dangerous elements of fascism in our country a long time ago. Do it to support a media that shows the links between our country's invasions and destructions in the Middle East and that destruction coming home on the roost in Europe, here, all over the world. You know, if you've never become a member or if you need to renew your membership, please do it during our year-end mini drive. We're just going to be here this week trying to raise enough money to help the station survive. As I mentioned before, we're all volunteers. You know, 99.9% of the people you hear on the air are volunteers. And we really believe in the mission of Pacifica to bring jazz and justice programming here at WPFW and WPFW.org. 202-588-9739 or pledge online at WPFW.org. So as we began our show today, environmental justice activists are wrapping up an important afternoon session at the UN Climate Summit in Paris. And yesterday, hundreds of nations from around the world participated in a mass demonstration inside the summit as the first draft of this summit agreement was circulated. And activists say will mean suicide for the planet, especially starting with the most vulnerable in developing nations. Leslie G. Fields is on the line with us this morning from Paris. She is Director of Environmental Justice and Community Partnerships with the Sierra Club in Washington, D.C. And in addition to her work at the Sierra Club, Fields was appointed by President Obama to serve on the board of directors of the Mickey Leland Urban Toxics Research Center. She serves on the board of the Children's Environmental Health Network and on the board of Adesso African Solutions, formerly Horn Relief, and East African Natural Resources and Development Organization. She teaches international environmental law as an adjunct professor at Howard University Law School. Good morning, Leslie. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Well, it's still morning here in D.C. anyway. Thank you for joining us. Now, I know.
Bonjour.
Yeah, bonjour. And I know that you just hustled over. You said you were participating in a Black Lives Matter die-in at the summit. So tell me, let's start with that. Tell me about what was that all about?
Well, thank you so much for this opportunity, Esther. And I thank you, WPFW, and the community for being interested. I'm here at the Conference of Parties to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. It's called COP21. It's the 21st session. And bringing together 190 countries, about 25,000 governments and parties and non-governmental organizations. And today, the great young people with the historically black colleges and universities in Climate Justice Consortium, led by Dr. Beverly Wright from the Deep South Center for Environmental Justice at Dillard University in New Orleans, and Dr. Bob Bullard with Texas Southern University in Houston, Texas, and NAACP, our good friend Jackie Patterson, who is the Climate Justice Director, and a number of great students participated in a Black Lives Matter event after a very stimulating panel discussion about environmental justice and climate justice. So they made signs, they had masks, they marched around this huge conference hall. There are people here from all over the world. There are indigenous peoples here, faith groups, women's groups, and they marched around and making the intersectional linkages between how the communities of color and African-American communities are literally dying because of environmental racism and pollution. Climate change, climate disruption multiplies all inequalities. So our communities, our kids, our number one reason our kids miss school is because of asthma. Then our communities have suffered so much from extreme weather. We remember what happened 10 years ago with Hurricane Katrina. Mm-hmm. There have been other hurricanes in our communities. And so they're making the linkage between Black Lives Matter here and also marching in solidarity with our African brothers and sisters, because they're also demanding that the agreement that's being hammered out right now at the COP21 with the government's negotiators reflect the need to make sure that carbon emissions are cut so that we only see 1.5 Celsius increase, which means that we have to cut our emissions of carbon because, again, people in the global south are suffering more from climate disruption but are least responsible for it.
Now, how do your top concerns in terms of environmental justice just kind of interlock with these larger concerns? You know, it's hard for me to think of environmental justice kind of separate mm-hmm. from the overall big picture of what people are fighting for there.
Right. Well, that's a great question. I mean, like I mentioned, the issues in the United States with African Americans and people of color and environmental justice include health, environmental health issues. Because of the extreme temperatures that have been created due to climate change, due to the industrial pollution from the facilities, our communities have been sited next to industrial facilities, disproportionately sited next to landfills, which emit methane, disproportionately sited and suffering from mobile sources such as cars. Our communities were cut up by highways, as you well know. So we have mobile sources, we have pollution from incinerators and pollution from coal plants, pollution from all kinds of industrial facilities, chemical plants. You look at communities such as in Louisiana, from Baton Rouge to New Orleans, we call it Cancer Alley because of the concentration of chemical facilities and refineries in the African-American community. In Houston, the Ship Channel, all these port communities are suffering. We have a problem with, due to the ports widening, train traffic going through our communities, because our communities have been cited for these terrible industrial supply chain routes, truck traffic. So all of these things contribute to the overall carbon emissions, and African Americans and people of color in the United States are less responsible for these emissions. Our folks take the bus. Our folks take public transit. You see more people walking, and you see carpooling, and we are not part of this huge industrial complex in terms of many people will work in these facilities, but they are also being exposed to chemicals and chemical processes. And right. So this is going on globally, and it's a connection. The indigenous communities, again, are least responsible for the emissions destroying their land, the communities who live on the islands, the barrier islands in the Arctic, the indigenous communities, as well as the communities living in Tuvalu and Kiribati in the south, in the Pacific Ocean. These communities are going to have to move. We have a young man with us who is from a small town in Alaska, and his tribe had to vote to move to the mainland. And what that means is you don't get to visit the graves of your grandparents. You lose your culture. And so they are least responsible for these emissions from the global north, and they are suffering the most. So it's very connected. It's all tied together, and we're in solidarity with these communities all over the world. It's really quite a blessing and amazing to be here to see these communities from the Amazon, from Africa, from Asia, and to have our own African American and indigenous activists here lifting up their voices to the government to make sure that this agreement is going to reflect gender issues, human rights, and reflect the need that we have to cut carbon pollution because of the drought. It exacerbates all inequalities, as I said. So if you live in a community that has lots of droughts, you're going to have more droughts. If you live in the Gulf Coast, you're seeing more flooding and storms. My parents live in Massachusetts. They got 100
before you get to that
winter.
Before you get to that, Leslie, I wanted to, you're saying so many amazing things, and I wanted to ask you about the young man you said is with your group from Alaska, and his whole community had to move, because most people think of these communities being in, like, say, the South Pacific, where water levels are rising and whole islands are diminishing and disappearing. But in terms of Alaska, how was his community impacted?
Well, his name is Esau, and I'm trying to find the correct pronunciation of his community. He lives on a small island off the coast of Alaska, and his people have been fishing and hunting for whales and hunting for seals since time immemorial. And because of the sea level rises, the storms are more severe, and they're losing their landmass. The land is eroding. They've had to move his grandmother. And so it's not safe for them because the land's eroding and the land's being washed away because of the sea level rise due to the Arctic melting. Okay. And they also have problems because they're indigenous hunters and fisher people, and they're not able to, the animals, the ecosystem is changing for the animals too. So they're not getting, their hunts are not, as they used to be. They're having a hard time finding the fish they need, and the animals are, and the ecosystem are also suffering. So it's a very sad story. It's going on all over the world, and the river systems, the people live on rivers. I mean, this is going on everywhere, and it's really the challenge of this generation. But there's also a lot of solutions, and it's also very exciting to see the solutions being promoted, but we also have to make sure that those solutions are not exclusive of people of color and African Americans, that they are a part of 100% green economy.
Yes, and the other thing I wanted to ask you when you were talking about all the myriad ways that the African American community here is impacted by these industrial pollution, it reminded me of a term that I had only recently been acquainted with, which is sacrifice zone. And
correct.
There was a young woman, even here from our area in Prince George's County, who's been kind of speaking at some of the local actions. And she talked about even Prince George's County areas of Prince George's County right here in the DMV being a sacrifice zone in terms of a new facilities being built there that will basically add to pollution and really create an environmental hazard for the people living around them, which you know, that's a largely African-American population. So I wanted to ask you about this other term that I've read in the literature circulating there in Paris about 2 degrees is genocide. And you talked about how there's this push for 1.5, no more than a 1.5 increase in the global temperature. So tell us more about this 2 degrees is genocide analysis.
Well, basically, the 1.5 degrees Celsius is really the upper limit of what people in nature can adapt to. And that means that there needs to be about 70% reductions of carbon below 2010 levels by 2050. And that means that the industrialized countries, including the United States, really have to limit their emissions of carbon to get to this goal. Because, as I mentioned, the countries in the global south, on the continent of Africa, any higher really means great suffering. Really means that the droughts will be more severe, means that you'll see where there is flooding, you'll see more flooding. Remember a few years ago that horrible flooding in Mozambique and Lesotho, and this is very, very disruptive. Crops aren't growing properly, fishing stocks are collapsing, and so this is really the upper limit is 1.5 degrees. Anything higher really is catastrophic for the global south, and so it's really about how much more emissions below 2010 levels by 2050. This is basically this agreement, which is being hammered out right now, and we're supposed to have gotten the latest text. I was in the middle of the NAACP HBCU Consortium Symposium, which was excellent, and presentations by young people. So I haven't seen the latest text. And so we work very closely, the environmental justice community, with PACJAW, the Pan-African Climate Justice Alliance, and they are calling for only 1.5 degrees because their countries and communities are already suffering. And there is a term also called climate refugees. I mean, people are having to move because they can't sustain themselves on the land anymore. It has direct impact on women. The gender issues are very acute, and people are moving into cities. The slums are getting larger and larger. There's more violence against women. But you also, as you know, when you have to move and you become a refugee or an internally displaced person, if you're in your own country, they, again, you lose your culture, you lose your tradition. And so it's a very tragic situation, and we have to make sure that these countries receive the adequate finance to adapt, first to mitigate the effects, but also to adapt when necessary. And so it's very scary. When you see the level of storms and disruption and the migration patterns for people, and then that also causes conflict when groups of people move into another group, another community, that causes conflict. So you see conflict rising, and women and children and vulnerable populations suffer the most.
Okay. Now, I do want to ask you about the innovations in Africa and things that people are doing, you know, in our communities to, I guess, combat climate change and create a more sustainable living environment for themselves. But I need to take a little brief break to pitch again. We're in our year-end mini drive, and I am on the phone with Leslie Fields, Director of Environmental Justice and Community Partnerships for the Sierra Club. She's in Paris, and she's connecting with us back home to let us know what's happening there. And And Leslie's also worked with Damu Smith, who many of our listeners will know from his work here at the station. Damu was a longtime environmental activist, and, you know, just social justice activist. And so she has that connection with us and to the station. And we want you to have that connection as well. We want you to join, become a member, renew your membership, get a membership for someone else if you've already joined. And also think about, this is the year end, this is the time for giving. It's also a time to think about those tax deductions. So if you need one, this is a great place. This is a great organization to support. 202-588-9739, 202-588-9739, or pledge online at wpfw.org. I want to ask you, Leslie, about, and also, you know, I do want people to be able to call in, Mike. If they can call in at 202-588-0893 and weigh in on the conversation, that's great. They may have questions or comments about what's happening in Paris, climate change, the links between all these issues we're talking about, you know, refugees, displacement, you know, even the people who are concerned about terrorism. All these things are so intertwined that we, you know, welcome your comments this morning, 202-588-0893. But don't forget to call 202-588-9739 to pledge. So Leslie, what are some of the innovations that you see? I know that you work with a group in East Africa, East African Natural mm-hmm. Resources and Development Organization. So, you know, you're on the ground and you see what's happening around the world. Tell us about what we're doing in our communities to basically do what we can.
Well, thank you for that question, Esther. And again, thank you for this opportunity. There's a lot of exciting innovations going on. And, for example, there are all kinds of innovations in terms of renewable energy. But we also have to make sure that there's a just transition, that workers are protected, that they're just you know, that they're unionized, that there's union density in these new renewable industries, because union density supports communities of color specifically. And, for example, there is actually a huge solar array in Somaliland, which is hooked up to the East African power pool. And so you're seeing more and more innovation. There's a lot of work, the power program that President Obama has promoted with certain African nations. There was a U.S. African energy ministerial last year, and so the United States is committed to working with certain African nations on making sure that they are plugged into the power grids using renewable energy, and many of these countries get a great deal of sun, and so it's a matter of just making sure that there's grid security in these innovations. There's innovations in terms of batteries for electric cars. There's innovations in terms of public transportation. There's great programs going on in terms of, you might have heard, with our great friend Green for All. They've got a Green the Church initiative. There's a lot of programs all over the country in different communities where there are tax incentives for solar that you can also, in Austin, Texas, and also in the rest of Texas, they have their own grid. And so Texas has done very, very well, believe it or not, in terms of wind power. And basically they have more electricity from wind that they know how to deal with. So after 9 p.m., people can run their appliances, and it's not costing them anything. So we really are at the cutting edge, and we've been at the cutting edge for a long time. The problem has been the political will. I'm sure some of your listening audience may remember, who are our age, Jimmy Carter had solar panels on the White House, and Ronald Reagan took them down because of the oil and gas industry pressure, right? Now just think, we've been stunted from this. We should be able to go to Costco now, 40 years later, and get our solar panels. And it should be... Okay, seriously, people should be upset about this. We've been stunted in terms of our access to renewable energy and to get our young people into renewable sectors and renewable careers. So these are the careers of the future.
Right.
And so we are now catching up. Solar is a lot less cheaper than it used to be, and that we have to make sure people need to advocate for the tax incentives for renewable energy so everybody can benefit from them, not just wealthy folks, but everybody can benefit from them. And it's very, very important that our fixed income folks our elders are also able to benefit from getting, you know, renewable energy so that they're comfortable in the summer and in the winter. So there's a lot going on. I think that there is, you know, other governments have pledged, and you have the Europeans, you have Germany,
Leslie, we have two callers that I want to try to get in really quick. People have called in that want to join our discussion really quick. Good morning, caller. Just say your first name, where you're calling from. I have like 30 seconds.
Peace, friend. Thank you. My name is Michelle Leslie. Thank you for holding it down. Can you tell me what the plan is for communities like the Mossville, Louisiana community, especially giving the environmental justice folks and PACTA have been meeting over there in Paris? What will be the plan for communities like Mossville being faced with improper and unfair, quote, voluntary buyout for this new big energy regime?
Mossville. Leslie, do you have a comment for her?
Well, that's great. And thank you, Michelle, for that. And Michelle Roberts is a great activist on environmental justice and chemical policy. So as I mentioned, there's a lot of coalitions here. There's Gulf Self Rising, there's the Take Roots Coalition, there's Indigenous Environmental Network, and everybody's been meeting. We've got a huge group of people who are waste pickers from all over the world, and so they have been pushing our government to include these human rights issues, and it's not easy, and it's a real problem because our government is committed to making sure there's some kind of agreement, but, you know, again, we haven't seen the final text yet. So right. They've been very, very active, and the It Takes Roots Coalition, which includes Gulf Self Rising and all those coalitions that I mentioned, are very, very active, along with the Zero Waste Coalition of activists from all over the world, pushing on our government to do that. So I think that it remains to be seen, Michelle, what exactly is going to come out. But there's a... human rights has not been bracketed. It has not been put aside yet. But in terms of individual communities, that's really not what individual communities are not addressed. They're looking at in terms of an agreement that reflects the human rights of the most vulnerable population.
Okay. You know, we have so much more to talk about in terms of human rights, gender rights, the responsibility of traditional polluters like the United States and Europe to pay and to compensate countries and communities that are trying to survive right now. And hopefully when you arrive back in D.C., we can follow up and, you know, just talk for the whole hour about these issues. But we're running out of time right now.
So, I think may I just say that, you know, there's so many communities, Climate Justice Alliance, there's so many activists engaged in this, and that's the beautiful thing, is that anybody can get involved because the local issues are the global issues. There's right. It's completely connected. It's completely intersectional, and it's very exciting. And anybody, if you're a student and you're a concerned person, can be involved in this and helping make sure that your community thrives and that the Obama administration really needs to hear from everybody. So all these folks are here, more people than I'm sorry that I'm missing, but there are communities around the world, the most vulnerable populations and the places where the solutions are coming from are here, and they're represented and they turned out. It's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and you know, when we talk about the solutions are coming from us, we don't want to take the weight off of those who are responsible for providing the adequate and proper financing to make up for, you know, decades and centuries of pollution that's impacted
right.
the planet. So I've been speaking with Leslie G. Fields, Director of Environmental Justice and Community Partnerships for the Sierra Club. She's based here in D.C., and she's in Paris right now. And thank you, Leslie.
Well, thank you very much, Esther.
Okay.
I appreciate it. I love your show, and God bless you, and happy to... I think it'd be great to have a forum with some of these other climate justice activists when they all get back.
Okay. Okay, and I want to thank you, too, as we wind up our participation in the year-end mini drive. That'll do it for us on today's show, Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the on-the-ground edition. I'm Esther Averam, and I want to thank again Leslie Fields of the Sierra Club and all those who are at the forum at UDC this morning. I think we played a clip from that action. And also to Chantel James for her reporting this morning, and I'm signing off for Amy Alexander and Jamila Bay. I want to thank DJ Waheed, Michael Byfield, and all those who helped me put the show together. And thank you for supporting your station for Jazz and Justice. I am waiting to hear from supporters and callers and listeners this morning, but you can call 202-588-9739 or go to wpfw.org and donate there to support the station in our year-end mini drive. If you go online, make sure it says Thursday's Community Watch and Comment in the window. All donations will help On the Ground meet its goal, 202-588-9739. Oh, I do want to thank Catherine. Thank you so much, Catherine, for supporting this morning. You can reach the show at onthegroundshow.org, where you can now listen to all of our shows or past shows. Please like our Facebook and Twitter pages at On the Ground Show. Now stay tuned for the news with Askia Muhammad, followed by Krista Property on the Thursday edition of Don't Forget the Blues. Raise your voice out there. Peace. ¶¶